How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Frequency. And thank you all for tuning in.
Welcome to another 1 year anniversary celebration show. Here's where I play some new volumes of the original shows that I've had, and I also take some time to answer some questions. Before I do that, if you enjoy this podcast, please follow, review, and rate. More importantly, share it. Now, in regards to the questions and answers, like I said before, I will be grouping the similar asked questions into one. More of the individual one-off ones, I answered those directly. The first question is, what kind of editing software do I use? I use a combination of Filmora and PowerDirect. I tend to bounce between the two, but I'm always looking for some new ones. So if you guys know of any, let me know in the comments. A few other questions have been about the increase that I have in trailers for other shows that I play. And the answer there is, I'm a very small independent podcast, and I like to support other small independent podcasts. And luckily, they do the same for me. Speaking of which, if you're listening to this and you found my podcast through a trailer from another podcast, let me know about that. Now, when it comes to things like the trailers or ads or even the intros, I try to keep them in certain areas so that they're not a surprise or an inconvenience, so that they're easy to skip if you want to get to the episode. Another question I get is if there's a character that I wish had an audio drama or a radio series. And that's easy for me. As a comic book fan, and as a fan of pulp heroes, I would have really loved to have heard a series about the Phantom or the Spirit. I also think those would have done really good as a radio drama. If you don't know those characters, I highly recommend that you look them up. Now, in order to make the intro nothing too long, we're going to go ahead and stop the questions there, and we'll continue more on the next episode. Please don't forget to check out the description for all of the show links and the archives with over 200 episodes for you guys to catch up on. And with all that,
please enjoy the show.
Escape. Escape tonight. Ancient Egypt. The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations presents Escape, a new series of programs of which this, the sixth, is The Ring of Fog by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Wherever the English language is spoken, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is known for two things: his immortal character, Sherlock Holmes, and his unshakable belief in life beyond the grave. So great is the stature of Sherlock Holmes that Conan Doyle's earlier stories are all but forgotten. Stories like The Ring of Thought, which so clearly anticipates the author's later fascination with spiritualism. We invite you now to escape to ancient Egypt and The Ring of Thought, an adventure told in the words of John Van Sittart Smith, British Egyptologist.
I
arrived in Paris on the 3:14 express from Dieppe and went immediately to my hotel in the Rue de Lafitte. My actions so far had worked out according to my planned schedule. I slept for exactly 2 hours, got up and dressed, donned a greatcoat, walked down the Avenue de l'Opéra, and entered a side door of the Louvre. Once inside and amid surroundings entirely familiar to me, I made my way immediately to the Chamber of Egyptian Relics, or more specifically, to the cabinet in that chamber which contained the El Kab collection of papyri. Drawing out the particular roll I wished, I placed it on a nearby table, sat down, began to study it, when I noticed one of the museum attendants who was polishing some brasswork across the room. His face struck me as being curiously Egyptian. On sudden impulse, I decided to cross the room and speak to him. Approaching closer, I was impressed at once by the appearance of his skin. Drawn tautly across temple and cheek, it seemed as glazed and as shiny as varnished parchment. And out of narrowed slits, there glowed two green and vitreous eyes, misty with a dry shininess, eyes of a kind never seen in a human head before. I beg your pardon. I need one of the papyri from the Memphis collection. Could you tell me where it is?
You'll find it in the last cabinet at the end of the room, monsieur.
Thank you. You're Egyptian, aren't you?
No, monsieur. I am a Frenchman.
I thought perhaps...
If monsieur will excuse me now, I have other work to do.
I went back to the table and took up the papyrus I had been studying before. But my former calmness in translating the intricate hieroglyphics was gone, and out of the depths of my mind welled a feeling of terrible familiarity. I concentrated more deeply on my studies, pushing aside those thoughts conducive to mental turmoil, and at last, worn out by the inward struggle, I fell asleep. I awoke with a start, not remembering where I was. It was quite dark for a moment. Then gradually my eyes focused on the glints of moonlight reflected from the glass tops of specimen tables, from the shiny varnish of the mummy cases. And I realized with a feeling of sudden dread that I was alone in the Egyptian room of the Museum of the Louvre, locked in for the night. And I saw at that moment, approaching through the moonlit halls, a dim yellow flame. Nearer and nearer it came until I could perceive above it, as though floating in the air, the eerie, glistening face of the man I'd spoken to earlier. I shrank into the dark shadow of my corner, and he passed without seeing me, stopping before the mummy cases a few yards away. Scarcely daring to breathe, I watched him place the light on a table and begin feverishly to examine the tags on the specimens. In a moment, he gave a cry of delight, and drawing one of the mummies from its resting place, laid it on the table in the full glow of the lantern and set to work. He was unwinding the wrappings from the head of the corpse. A few turns revealed a tumbled cascade of black curls. A few more, the snow-white brow, then the delicate nostrils, and at last, the full, warm, passionate lips, the face of the most beautiful woman the world has ever seen.
Forgive me, beloved.
I could hardly believe my eyes. The man was obviously in love with this mummy. After a while, he left the body, turning his attention to one of the glass cases filled with an assortment of rings. From a pocket of his garment, he'd taken a small glass bottle containing some kind of liquid, and he used this now to test the rings, rejecting them one after another. Then at last...
This is it. It's the one. At last I found it. The ring of Thoth.
In his excitement, he dropped the bottle, and I gasped in surprise at the sudden sound.
Who's there?
I beg your pardon.
So it is you. No, do not move.
I didn't mean to spy on you. I fell asleep.
Who are you, monsieur?
I am John Vansittart Smith, a student of Egyptology.
No matter. You will observe this knife.
Yes.
Had I discovered you 5 minutes ago, monsieur, I should have slain you without a word.
What?
As it is now, I have found the ring. But I warn you not to interfere with me in any way.
I really haven't the slightest intention of it. After all, I'm only here by accident.
Perhaps.
I say, you shouldn't have unwrapped that mummy, you know. It's starting to deteriorate already.
Oh, my beloved.
Yes, before our eyes, the lovely face was crumbling, the hair falling away, the skin shriveling and cracking, the lips fading. The man hovered over the decaying body a moment, murmuring sorrowfully. And then he turned again.
No matter. That will not make the least difference in a little while. Of what importance is the dead shell, so long as her spirit waits for me at the other side of the veil?
What are you talking about? What is it you're proposing to do?
Tonight, monsieur, I have ended a quest and broken at last the ancient curse. Nothing now can prevent my joining her.
Are you actually claiming that you knew her?
She was Atma, daughter of the governor of Abaris. And both she and I lived in the reign of Thutmosis 3,500 years ago.
You're obviously mad.
Perhaps. But not in the way you think. There may be design in this, your coming here. It may be decreed that I should leave some account behind as a warning to other mortals as rash as myself. Very well, then. So be it. I am, as you surmised, an Egyptian. My name was Sasra, and my father had been the chief priest of Osiris in the great temple of Abaris, which stood, in those days, upon the Bubastic branch of the Nile. I was brought up in the temple and was trained in all those mystic arts and sciences known to the priesthood. Of all the mysteries that I studied, none intrigued me more than the question of life and death. And even to this question, in time, I found an answer.
But for a man to live beyond his allotted span of years, Master Sastra, the gods have not so ordained it.
Then perhaps they will have to revise their ordinances now that I have discovered their secret.
'Tis not well to jest. I tremble, for though I have labored in your service for a year, I knew not the goal of your endeavors. May Osiris forgive me.
Ah, what a pity you look upon it this way. For I'd thought that in return for your assistance, I should grant you, too, the gift of centuries of indestructible life.
I would not have it, Master Sastra. And I beg that you, too, forgo it.
Forgo it? I introduced the fluid into my veins 1 month ago.
Oh, no. Then you are lost indeed.
Lost? Do you call this being lost? Let's see now. My heart should be about here.
Oh, that knife. No, don't. Master, you've killed yourself.
Not at all. See? It bleeds a little. But in a while, the wound will close up. And that's all.
You. It's immortality.
No. I shall not live forever. But for 5,000, perhaps 6,000 years, I shall be immune from all dangers of violence, poison, disease, starvation.
You cannot die?
Now, with this fluid in my veins, nothing in this world can end my life.
Sasra! Sasra, are you there?
Someone called.
It's Parmes, the priest of Thoth. In here, my friend. Enter.
Oh. Greetings, Sasra, master of sciences.
and his worthy assistant.
If you will excuse me, Masters, I go to make my peace with Osiris.
What's wrong with your helper, Sorcerer?
The thought of a well-nigh eternal life has frightened him into gibbering superstition.
Then you still believe in the discovery?
Believe in it? Parmes, my friend. Look.
By the heavens, what a scar.
It pierces the heart. It was done only a moment ago with this knife.
Hmm?
See? I can put it back in the wound. So.
You suffered no ill effects?
None whatever.
And if I turn the knife in the wound, that would do you no harm?
You may try it. I feel nothing. I walked last week in the snake pits by the river, was struck innumerable times. It caused no harm.
By the great Anubis.
Will you have it then? Out of all Egypt, I have chosen only you, my friend, to share the gift. But the choice is yours.
I'd be a fool to refuse, Sosra. I'll have it. And now, what must I do?
First, we must open a vein in your wrist, like this.
Oh.
Then, we drip the elixir slowly into your bloodstream. Steady now.
I don't feel anything.
There is no sensation. It is done.
So simple? There is nothing more?
That's all. And now done, it can never be changed.
It seems incredible, supernatural.
It's no more than a chemical discovery. But with it, while all this about us passes away, you and I, Parmes, will live on for 50 centuries. Think of it, my friend. 5,000 years of life.
5,000 years. Only the two of us.
Listen, that noise. Some procession must be passing in the street.
I have an idea what it may be. Come on over to the window.
Clear the road. Stand back and make way for the loveliest pearl of deep.
She's being carried on the shoulders of slaves, Parmes. She must be some woman of rank.
Her name is Atma. She's the daughter of the new governor.
Her curtains are drawn back. Perhaps we'll have a look at her. Oh, Parmes.
Mm-hmm. Is she not beautiful?
She is the most desirable, the only utterly desirable woman I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, I saw her yesterday at the temple.
Then you're most fortunate, my friend. You've had 24 more hours to dream about her than I've had. I must know her, Parmes. I must make her love me. I'll send gifts. I'll call on her tomorrow. Oh, it has to be then. I couldn't wait any longer than tomorrow.
A visitor calls upon the beloved of the universe. He is Sosra, priest of the temple of Osiris.
Well, bid him approach.
Enter, Sosra.
Oh, most beautiful of all Egypt, I cast myself at your feet.
That's a noble ambition. But wouldn't it be much better to sit here beside me and watch the fish in the fountain?
Much better.
You will all withdraw. Except you, my girl. Play something for us. At a distance. Well, Sosra, for so I understand you're called, am I to deem this an official visit by a master of the temple?
Oh, Atma, my beloved. That is, no, it is not official.
Oh? Perhaps then you wish to see my father on personal business of your own.
Oh, no. No. I shall pay my respects to him at some other time.
Then could it be I you've come to see?
Yes.
And since you've said the visit's not official, your reason must be a personal one.
Oh, it is.
Well, what is it?
Atma, I have known women who are famed for their beauty throughout the Valley of the Nile. But not one, not all of them, are so lovely as you.
How thoughtful of you to come here and tell me.
Atma, I've no wish to intrude my desires, my hopes, beyond such extent as you may wish to hear. But, I'm finding this very difficult.
Sosra, I've been told that you're a master of science, that you've unlocked the secrets of the universe, learned all the mysteries of nature itself.
Your informants have been most generous.
Yes, I'm inclined to think so.
Why?
Because you've discovered nothing at all about such a simple thing as a woman's heart.
What do you mean?
I come from Thebes. And the women of Thebes are warm-blooded, passionate. And we know what we want.
Atma.
I saw you first 3 days ago. Why do you think I told my bearers to carry me down that street beneath your window?
And so, miracle of all miracles, Atma loved me. Worshipping the very ground her feet had trod upon, I lived through those glorious weeks. And with it all, our love grew apace. But one thing bore heavily upon my mind, and I came to speak of it more often to my beloved as we sat and talked by the fountain in her garden.
Look, Sasra. See how the stars shine from the water?
Yes, Atma. More lovely even than their glow in the heavens.
Are they very old, the stars?
Very old, beloved. As old as time.
And they'll go on gleaming there. Long years after you and I are gone and forgotten.
Atma, my dearest. We've talked of this before, and I know it distresses you to think of it.
No, Sasra. Tonight everything is beautiful. We shall not talk of death.
Not of death, but of life. They're only counterparts of one another.
Oh, if we could only live together. Grow old together and die in the same instant.
But how much better to live and love 5,000 years? Will you not do it? Does so long a time seem too great for the love you feel for me?
Beloved, no. The time would pass in an instant, and the loss then be no easier borne than now.
Then why draw back? Will you not take the elixir now, tonight?
I'm afraid, Sasra. We'll anger the gods.
We will outlive the gods.
They will have their revenge.
Whatever occurred, we'd be together.
Yes, I've thought of that. Were it not so, I'd not even consider doing it.
Then you'll do it. Atma, you'll do it.
I need more time, only a little more to assure myself.
How much?
Tonight, Sasra. Give me tonight.
Every hour you live without the elixir is another hazard. All right, then. Tonight. And may Isis herself guard over you until the fluid courses in your veins. And so, on that accursed night, I went to my chambers and slept. And while I slept, the moon of Isis shone over the delta of the Nile, shone but to light as foul a scene as was ever done on earth. Some hours had passed away.
Master Sosra! Master Sosra! Awaken! Master, awaken at once!
You know, who is it?
Oh, what a terrible thing has transpired this night.
You! You're one of Atma's slaves. Why do you come here?
Oh, Master. Master.
What has happened? What's the matter? Speak.
It is she, the light of the world.
Tell me what has happened to her.
Master. Master. Brigands came in the night. She is dead.
You lie. You lie.
Oh, Sasra, the slave speaks the truth.
Parmes, my friend. What foul joke's behind these words of his?
It's not a joke. Atma is dead. You, slave, depart from us.
Yes, Master. By your gracious leave, I depart.
Such a thing cannot be. Oh, of course. The two of you planned it together, sought to frighten me out of my wits. It's very amusing, really. But I was terrified for a moment.
Atma no longer lives. She was stabbed to death only a short while ago.
No. Oh, no, no. She can't be dead.
She is dead, Sosra, and for all eternity.
I must go to her. Something. Surely something can be done.
I killed her.
What is it? What has happened?
I killed her.
Oh.
I struck her through the heart with this very knife.
You? You, Parmes? Why?
Because she loved you.
Why?
And because I loved her.
You, my friend.
She would not look at me.
And for that, you would lose her to both of us forever?
To both of us, Sasra? I think not.
By the living Osiris, give me that knife.
That's it. Strike. Again. Here's the heart. Here, strike. Again and again, Sasra.
Wait. What foolishness. I cannot kill you.
You're wrong, Sasra. You have killed me. Those were grievous blows.
But the fluid, that cursed elixir of life, it runs in your veins as well as mine.
True. But in mine is also the antidote.
You lie. There is no antidote.
Yes, day and night, these many weeks, I've worked, and I found it.
You couldn't have. Is there more of it?
Yes, a very little. But you'll never find it.
Where is it? Tell me where it is.
In the ring, Sasra. In the ring of Thoth. And you'll never find it.
I will. I will. I must.
Go on. Live. Live your 50 centuries. And every hour of them, think. It was your hand that struck me down. With the same knife that took her from you. Think. While I go to join her.
Oh, no. You're not dead. You're not! No! 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 For months, I searched the papers, test tubes, and the chemical flasks in the chambers of the dead priest of Thoth. Searched and found nothing. I sifted the sands where he'd walked, questioned his slaves and servants, and learned nothing. Every moment of my life, my terrible and unwanted life, was devoted to an unceasing hunt for the Ring of Thoth, and all to no avail. And in time, a horde of barbarians overran the city of Abaris. And the sands of the desert buried forever the last of my hopes. And so began the deadly march of the centuries. How can you know how terrible a thing time is? You, who've experienced only the narrow course between the cradle and the grave. I've floated down the whole stream of history. I have traveled in all lands, and I have dwelt with all nations. Every tongue is the same to me. I need not tell you how slowly the centuries drifted by. Centuries without end, years without number. And so, I came to be one day, a few weeks past, in San Francisco, where I came across a certain item in a newspaper.
Among recent discoveries in Lower Egypt is an unopened mummy case containing, according to the inscription on the outside, the body of the daughter of the governor of Abaris in the days of Thutmosis. In the same burial crypt, dropped into a crevice between the stones, was found a large platinum ring of singular design. Both specimens have been sent for examination to the Louvre in Paris.
So, I presume you came here to Paris, obtained this position of attendant in the Louvre with the idea of...
Only yesterday, Monsieur Smith. As you may imagine, I had little difficulty in convincing the director of my knowledge of Egyptian relics.
The ring, then? The one I saw you remove from the case is the Ring of Thoth?
Without question.
You've discovered how the ring must be used?
The secret is obvious. See, the stone is hollow, and drops of liquid move within it.
Have you considered the possibility that this antidote may not perform the function which has been claimed for it?
It will, monsieur. And there'll be no need of a knife to strike me down. My death was due in a time long past. And only this damnable fluid that runs through my veins supports the weight of my years. I delay no longer. I go to join her where she waits for me in death.
No, don't.
Too late. I've broken the gem. I've taken the antidote.
I stood and watched him with a terrible fascination, but without pity and without compassion. He turned away from me and reeled toward the mummy he'd left on the table across the room. But even as he turned, the parchment skin of his face cracked and shredded. Discolored lips shriveled away from the yellow teeth. The vitreous eyes withered into nubs of formless plasm. And the full weight of his 3,500 years descended on him in an instant. I left that room of death and walked over the marble floors toward the exit, my footsteps echoing through the empty halls, even as they had echoed for so long in the corridors of time. And I wondered as I walked if Sasra knew now what I knew, that the antidote in the Ring of Thoth can bring death to the body, but not to the soul. And I wondered in what cloak of flesh his spirit now dwelt, just as I, Parmes, priest of Thoth, had for the last 40 years of my 3,500 dwelt in the body of John Vansittart Smith.
Well, now, he's only 2 days old.
But he doesn't look a bit like either his father or me.
Live in time, my dear. All babies look pretty much alike when they're first born.
I don't know. His eyes are... it's silly, of course, but he looks like an Egyptian.
Produced and directed by William N. Robeson, The Ring of Thoth by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with Jack Webb as Sorcerer, Thomas Freeburn Smith as Vansittart Smith, and Joan Banks as Atma. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Escape is presented by the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations each week at this time. Next week, we invite you to escape to a raft in the South Pacific with John Russell in his unforgettable story of human frailty, The Fourth Man. And so good night until next week at this time, when again it will be time to escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson. This, the last of the summer series, is The Fourth Man by John Russell. Noumea in the South Pacific. To a generation of French criminals, a word to be uttered in the same terrified breath with Devil's Island. The penal colony at Noumea, where the cutthroats, garroters, and sadists from the dregs of French society were sent to a living death. Tonight we invite you to escape from Noumea in John Russell's The Fourth Man.
The raft stood to open sea. A mat of pandanus leaves served for its sail, and a paddle of wood for its helm. It was woven of reeds and bamboo sticks lashed upon triple rows of bladders, and it carried four men. Three of them sat huddled together at the far end. Their bodies were blackened with dried blood, and the hair upon them was long and matted. They wore only the rags of blue convicts' uniforms. On wrist and ankle, they carried their mark, the dark and wrinkled stain of the manacles. There was DuBose, doctor, man of the world, murderer.
Friends, the thing is done.
And Fenerul, forger, ladies' man, weakling, coward.
Yes, we've escaped.
And the one known as the parrot, thief and cutthroat.
So far, so good. And by the way of celebration, gentlemen, may I offer you cigarettes?
Cigarettes? Oh. Doctor, you're a marvel, a magician. Look at them. White and fresh as though they just came from the package.
How did you do it?
Oh, every 6 months there are about 75 escapes from Noumea, and not more than one succeeds. Ours would be that one I knew. So, 3 weeks ago, I bribed the night guard for these very cigarettes, so that we might sit here, my friends, as we are doing, and celebrate.
I want a light.
A light for the pet.
Our doctor's a wonder. He thinks of everything. He gives us cigarettes, matches, and our freedom.
Wait till you've got your 2 feet on the pavement again. That'll be the time to sound off about freedom.
To wear starched collars again. To stroll with a girl, clean and fresh from her bath. Down the Place de la Concorde.
Suppose we get a storm.
It's not the season of storms.
Just the same. Suppose we get a storm.
Okay, my friend. You must not be so impatient. Remember, we were convicts back there, festering in oblivion. Now we are men raised from the dead.
Suppose we get a storm. You've got a gift of speech, Doctor. But where's the ship that was going to meet us here?
This is the day, as agreed. It will meet us.
The wind will blow us to China if we keep on.
We can't lie any closer to shore. There's a government launch at Torian. And I doubt if the native trackers have given us up.
Careful, Parrot. The natives will eat you yet.
I've heard about that. Is it true, Doctor, that they'll keep all the runaways they can capture to fatten on?
Oh, they prefer the reward still. I doubt if they've entirely lost the habit of cannibalism.
Piece by piece, Parrot. First they'll pamper you. Then they'll make a stew out of your brains. Oh, they won't miss a thing.
Shut up, Fenerul. The filthy brutes.
Oh, I almost forgot. We have one of them with us.
Fourth man was steering the raft. He sat crouched in the stern, his body glistening with spray. His huge dark hands held the steering paddle. He was motionless, like an idol, his eyes fixed on the course ahead. The fourth man on the raft.
You are looking at a Canuck, my friend. You will see nothing superior. No line of beauty to redeem the low angle of the forehead. The knobby joints of the body. Nature has stamped him with the mark of inferiority, and he has set the final seal himself with that twist of bark about his middle, that prong of pig ivory through his nose.
Yes, but nonetheless, he's a man, and there is a price on our heads. He could be taking us where he likes.
Calm yourself, Fenerul. This is a very simple animal. An infant, really.
Does that mean he couldn't double-cross us?
It does. He is bound by his duty. I made my bargain with his chief up the river, and this one is sent to deliver us on board our ship. That's the only interest he has in us.
And he'll do it?
He will. That is the nature of the native.
No, I don't trust him, not for a minute.
The brute. The animal. You. It's you I'm talking about. You dirty brute.
Save your breath, Parrot. He speaks no language. Only a few noises, a few signs.
Well, I don't feel right on the same raft with that.
Well, burn yourselves up in the sun if you like, but me, I'm going to crawl under a mat and get some sleep.
Yes, we should all sleep a little, conserve ourselves. And when we awake, our ship will be here. A saucy little topsail schooner, a mast standing out against the sky, and we'll be on our way to France. Yes, sleep, my friend.
The two younger convicts dozed under the heat of the day, but not the doctor. He stood once again to sweep the skyline under his shaded hand. His plan had been so careful, so precise. He had counted absolutely on meeting the ship, a small schooner, one of those flitting half-piratical traders of the Copra Islands that can be hired, like cabs in a dark street, for any sinister enterprise. And there was no ship. And there was no crossroads where one might sit and wait.
Good morning, Doctor.
It's afternoon, Fenneru.
Oh, yes, so it is. I slept like a corpse.
Hey, where's the ship, Doctor? It was going to be here when we woke up.
It will be.
I'm thirsty. I'm dying with thirst.
So we all, Fenneru.
Where's the flask? I'm roasted in the sun.
You'll just have to roast some more. This crew is put on rations.
What are you talking about? Where's that water?
I have it here.
So you have. Do you think it's yours?
No. It's ours, Parrot.
I want a drink, Doctor.
Think a little, Parrot. We have to guard our supplies like reasonable men. We don't know how long we may be floating here.
Oh, so that's how you talk now. You don't know how long. But you were sure enough when we started.
I'm still sure. The ship will come. She cannot stay for us in one spot. She'll be cruising to and fro until she intercepts us. Then, we must wait.
That's good. Wait. And in the meantime, what? Fry here in this heat, our tongues hanging out, while you deal us out water drop by drop?
Perhaps.
No. A man doesn't live who can feed me with a spoon.
Unless you would die very speedily, we must guard our water. We can only do our best with what we have.
All right, Doctor. Do your best. Give me a drink.
You may have your share, of course. But be warned. When it's gone, don't come to us, to Fenneru and me.
Yes, what's fair is fair.
My drink.
Very well.
Oh, a thimbleful. One thimble.
This way we should have enough for 3 days, maybe more. With equal shares among the three of us.
That's right. There are only three of us.
You were thinking of him, General. Of our pilot? He looks somewhat like us, doesn't he? But his body has never known clothes. His feet, shoes. His heart has never known the swelling that comes with feelings of love or beauty. His mind has never known a single thought. Look at us three, gentlemen. You, Fenneru, a forger. You, Parrot, a thief. And I, Dr. DuBose, of Paris and Marseille, a murderer. And yet, we are civilized men. And this is a savage animal. And our provisions are for civilized men only.
The three men awoke to the second day on the raft. They looked and saw the far round horizon and the empty desert of the sea and their own long shadows that slipped slowly before them over its smooth, slow heaving. The land had sunk away from them in the night. The trap had been sprung. As the savage sun kindled upon them with the power of a burning glass, a calm fell. An absolute calm. The air hung, waited. The sea heaved and fell in polished undulations. And the sun shone, driving in under their eyelids like white-hot splinters. They crawled to the shelter of their mats, gasping, shriveling. And the water, the world of water, was slack and thick as oil.
Oh, how lonely it is.
Dr. DuBose. Yes, Barrett? Look around you.
What do you mean?
Go on, look around. What do you see?
I see water, Barrett, and the horizon.
What?
Nothing else.
Oh, don't you see a ship? A saucy little schooner? Those were your words. Well, where is it? Why don't you see it?
It will come.
Will it comfort us to be dead when it comes?
You say that you count on your friends, but suppose they leave you to rot here. Leave Paris and me to rot here. That would be a joke, eh, Doctor? To wait for a ship that will never come?
It will come. My friends will not fail me.
Why? How do you know? How can you be so sure?
There's a safety vault in Paris full of papers to be opened at my death. Those papers contain confessions. No, gentlemen, my friends will not fail me. Perrett.
There.
A moment ago, you asked me what I saw.
Well?
There was something I neglected.
What's that?
I see a Canuck on this raft with us. He does not join us. He does not look at us. He sits on his heels in the way of the native, with his arms hugging his knees. He sits at the stern, motionless under the shattering sun, gazing out into vacancy. Whenever I raise my eyes, I see nothing else. Only this Canuck.
He seems to be enjoying himself quite well.
I was thinking so myself.
The cannibal. The savage.
He does not seem to suffer.
What's going on in his brain? What does he dream of there? He looks as though he hates us.
A dirty rat.
Maybe he's waiting for us to die. Maybe he's waiting for the reward. At least he wouldn't starve on the way home. He could deliver us piece by piece.
How does he do it, Doctor? Hasn't he any feeling?
I've been wondering. It may be that his fibers are tougher. His nerves.
But we've had water, and he hasn't.
And yet, see his skin. It's moist and fresh.
And his belly, fat as a football. Don't tell me this savage is thirsty. Is there any way he could steal our supplies?
Certainly not.
Suppose he has his own supplies. Hidden.
What?
We'll see. Search the raft.
Come on, we'll learn his secret.
There, look under the mat.
Tear it apart.
I'll push him aside.
Anything there?
No.
Gentlemen,
no.
Gentlemen. You were mistaken. He has nothing hidden.
You're wrong about him, Doctor. You say he has no understanding. There's one thing he can understand. Hey!
Parrot, now so much. Get down.
There. Come. That'll teach you. Not so chipper now, are you? Not so happy with your luck. That'll make you feel...
Well, Parrot, you feel better now, don't you? Superior. Come back, my friend. Come back under the mats. The glare of the sun is not so bad there.
Oh, he
idiots.
What's the matter with our parrot now?
Idiots. Why do we look and look? The schooner can't help us now. If we're becalmed, then they are too.
Doctor, is that true?
Yes. We must hope for a breeze first.
Well, then why didn't you tell us we trust you? Why do you keep on playing out the farce?
You are wise, Doctor. You are very wise. Put down the knife, Barrett. You know things we don't, and you keep them to yourself. All right. But be careful. If you think you use your wisdom to get the best of us, be careful, Doctor, because I still have the knife.
And so the days dragged by, the second, the third, and now it was the fourth day, and still there was no breeze, and still there was no ship.
Oh, Doctor.
Yes?
What do you stare at?
At him. At him, the native.
The Canuck. Why?
Look at him. And look at us. We are dying. Our powers are ebbing.
And him?
Naked, wild, brutish. He has yet to give the slightest sign of complaint or weakness.
Doctor, is this a man or a fiend?
A man. It is a man.
A miracle.
It is a man and a very poor and wretched example of a man. Why, you'll find no lower type anywhere. Look at his cranial angle. The high ears. The heavy bones of his skull. Why, he's scarcely above an ape.
Then what?
He has a secret.
A secret?
But we see him. Every move he makes, every minute. What chance has he for a secret?
Absurd. Here are we three, children of the century, products of civilization. And here is this savage who belongs before the Stone Age. Is he to win this struggle? Absurd.
What kind of secret?
I can't say. Perhaps some method of breathing. Some strange posture he uses to cheat the sensations of the body. Such things are known among primitive peoples. Known and jealously guarded. Like the properties of certain drugs. The uses of hypnotism. Who knows?
We can know. We can find out.
Would you ask him? Useless. He would not tell. Why should he? We scorn him. We give him no share with us. We abuse him. And so he falls back upon his own expedients. They are the means by which he has survived from the depths of time. By which he may yet survive when all our wisdom is dust.
There are a number of ways of learning secrets. I know them all.
It would be useless. How could he stand any torture you might invent? You saw how he behaved before? No, no, that's not the way.
Oh, listen to my way. I'm tired of all this talk. You say he's a man. All right, then he has blood in his veins. At least we could drink.
No, it would be too hot. It would be salt.
Well, kill him then and throw him over the side. Let's be rid of the thing.
We gain nothing.
Then what do you want?
I want to beat him. That's what I want. To beat him at the game. For our own sakes, for our racial pride, we must. To outlast him. To prove ourselves his masters. Watch him. Watch him closely, my friend.
Watch. I'll watch, all right, my good doctor. I'm not sleeping anymore. And leave you alone with that bottle.
The bottle. The bottle.
I've been meaning to discuss our rations with you.
Have you?
We're running very short. I'm afraid we must cut down again.
And what are we cut to?
Half a thimbleful.
No.
We must keep our wits.
Well, I say no.
All right. Then we'll put it to a vote. You say no. I say yes. Fenarouf.
Yes. Yes, anything, but give me mine now.
Then it's half a thimbleful for Monsieur Fenarouf. Oh. Your share, Fenarouf.
More, I'll die. Give me more.
No more today.
You must. Doctor.
No more today.
Look, a ship.
Oh, at last.
Where is it? I don't see any ship.
It's a trick. Look, Fenarouf. He has the bottle. You dirty thief.
Look at him. You killed him with that oar.
What about the bottle?
Yes, there's some left. You caught him just in time.
And you caught the bottle just in time.
It seems I did.
And there is no ship. There will be no ship. We are done. Because of you and your dirty promises that brought us here. Doctor. Liar. Fool.
Don't come any closer. Unless you want this flask broken over your head.
No. Oh, I wouldn't want that.
Wait. Just think, Ferret. Why should you and I fight? We can see this trouble through and win, yet. This calm can't last forever. Besides, there will be only two of us to divide the water now.
Yes, that's true, isn't it? Fenarouf kindly leaves us his share, an inheritance. All right. I'll take mine now. My share. Right now, if you please. Later, we'll see.
So be it. Your share.
Many thanks. And now, Fenarouf's share. To me, please.
As you say.
And now, another good doctor.
Three. That's enough, Barrett.
No, doctor. It's not enough. Now I'll take the rest.
Barrett! Stop my arm!
I'll kill you if you don't let go. Thank you. You see, I have manners, haven't I? And I have wisdom, too. Because I fooled a very wise man. I toast you, Doctor. The best man wins. That was a bright idea of yours. The best...
So the best man wins, eh, Fred? You forgot I'm a doctor, didn't you? You forgot that a man cannot go without water for 4 days, then drink his fill and live through it, huh? Go on, Barrett. Gasp out your worthless life while I laugh. The best man always wins, Barrett. The best man...
So, best man wins, yes, Doctor. You forgot my knife, didn't you? Forgot me lying at your feet. Gave me up for dead, didn't you? But now it is I, Fenarouf, who will outlast the two of you. Yes, my good doctor. The best man always wins.
Fenarouf, you fool. The water, it's running out.
out.
Longboat's back, sir.
All right, send Marteau in.
He's right here, sir.
Bad luck, sir. The raft was here all the time, not 10 miles away from us.
Ah, that calm. Well, where are they, the passengers?
Oh, we're too late. They're all dead.
All dead, huh?
Yes, one stabbed to death, another skull crushed, the other fried by the sun. All dead.
Well, then, all the better. Of course, there's nothing to feed.
Yeah, but how are you going
to... Hogsheads, my friend. The hogsheads in the afterhold. Fill them nicely with brine, and there we are.
I don't understand.
Oh, you're dull, Marteau. Very dull. The gentleman's passage is all paid. Before we left Sydney, I contracted to bring back 3 escaped convicts. I'll bring them back. Pickled. So if you'll go back, Marteau, and bring him aboard for the trip, I'll be much obliged.
Very well, sir. Oh, there's a 4th man on the raft, Captain. A Canuck. Still alive. What do we do with him?
A Canuck? No word in my contract about any Canuck. Leave him there. He's only a savage.
And so Dr. DuBose and Fenneru and the parrot went aboard for the long trip to their beloved Paris. Their bodies pitching and rolling gently in a huge vat of brine. On the raft, the 4th man raised his head slightly as a wind freshened from the west. He watched until the schooner turned, shaping away for Australia, and disappeared over the rim of the horizon. Then he spread his sailor pandanus sleeves and headed his raft eastward. Back toward New Caledonia. Back toward home. Feeling somewhat dry after his exertion, the native plucked a hollow reed at random from the rushes on his raft. Slowly, lazily, he stretched himself at full length in his accustomed place at the stern. He thrust the reed down deep into one of the bladders underneath the raft, and slowly drank his fill of sweet water. He had a dozen such storage bladders remaining, built into the floats at intervals above the waterline, quite enough to last him safely home again. Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. The 4th Man by John Russell was adapted for radio by Irving Ravitch. With Paul Frees as Dr. DuBose, Joe Kearns as Fenneru, and Nestor Fiver as Parrot. Bill Johnstone narrated. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Escape is then presented by the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations. Be sure to be with us next Monday night when the Radio Theater returns to the air with Betty Davis and Glenn Ford starring in A Stolen Life. Remember, next Monday evening from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the Lux Radio Theater starts its 14th year over CBS. The play, A Stolen Life. The stars, Betty Davis and Glenn Ford. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.